Welcome down to my 9-foot homemade oak bar. Pour yourself a cold one. You are listening to Bucks in the Basement. My name's Chris, and Craig here is the biggest Pirates fan you'll ever meet. Let's talk Pirates baseball now. Welcome to Bucks in the Basement.
Now I see the changes in this town. They change, they say one thing, but then the next day.
Down here in the basement, unfortunately, Chris has lost his voice. So I have ordered him to rest those glorious pipes for 1 week. And at the spur of the moment, I was lucky enough to get on a former guest that everybody gave a warm, you know, Bucks in the Basement reception to. I'm bringing back Mike Piersak, Pirates beat reporter for the Post-Gazette, along with Jason Mackey. They have they do the North Shore Drive podcast I see out there every once in a while. But I just wanted to get Mike's impressions on some of the stuff we've seen so far down in spring training. Mike, how you doing, brother?
I'm doing great, Craig. I appreciate you having me on. I'm glad to hear that there's a warm Bucks in the Basement reception from the listeners. I feels good to have more people on board the wagon or whatever.
Yeah, I appreciate it, man. And with spring training, I know we're only a week in here and not really knowing, you know, certain directions that things are going, but I just want to get your impression on a few things here. First up, what position battle has like stuck out to you or intrigued you the most so far in spring training, and why?
So there are two that, you know, center field and shortstop, I think everyone would agree that the pins close to the Pirates are the ones that are the most competitive, I guess. I'll mention both here because I think they're both intriguing and they're kind of hard for me to separate, but they're interesting to me in different ways. In center field, I'm curious because it seems like, you know, Fowler or Alford or Goodwin are really the three that are out there, unless you want to throw on Jared Oliver too. But it's really, to me, like a big battle between like what they want this year to be. If this is a complete development year and you want to give a bunch of guys young time and you're not really worried about, you know, deadline trades or whatever, it seems pretty obvious that it would be, you know, Alford or Fowler or a guy who's a little bit younger that might fit into future plans. You know, the starting, I guess, reps out there. If they're hoping that Goodwin can be a guy who has a breakout year and then they can dish at the deadline just because he's a little bit older, then maybe they give him some reps too. Obviously, there's some like minor league options, stuff like that that fits in there too. But that's interesting to me in that sense. And then the shortstop position is interesting to me just in like there's no one who's definitely older. I guess Eric Gonzalez is a little bit older than the other two. But Kevin Newman's not, you know, old by any means, and he could still fit into future plans. And Cole Tucker is obviously as young as he is within future plans. So like that one to me is more just like where everyone kind of stands currently as how they view them for like, you know, the future upcoming years. And so we'll see how that breaks down. But both of them are ones that like it seems like maybe we could kind of guess. At least a shortstop. It seems like it's going to be Kevin Newman. He's playing best, and again, it's only been a week of spring training. But either way, both positions are kind of in a spot where you're not exactly sure how it's going to break down, and it's even interesting enough to see who will be the backup guy at any of those positions, you know?
Yeah, and those are definitely ones that, you know, people are focusing on a lot. We also brought up the backup catcher, which, I mean, I know it's, you know, a backup position. Stallings has what seems to be a stranglehold on that position. But what have you seen from the guys maybe behind the dish that would give you an inkling as to, you know, maybe who has the upper hand in that? And then Joe Hudson comes out and hits a bomb, so he puts his name in the hat too. So
Yeah, I think I need personally a little bit more time. I'm really bad at like figuring out who's doing the best in terms of like, especially at catcher, where it's not so much the hitting aspect, where you can't really look at like, you know, oh, this guy's, you know, 2 for 6 so far, and the other guy's 1 for 5 or whatever, and so that means one is doing better than the other. Like, I get the offense is part of it, but it's a lot of, you know, the defense, pitch blending, working with pitchers and all that. And so it's kind of hard to put my finger on exactly who I think is ahead. But, you know, I think both guys are in a similar frame, I guess, where it, I think both guys being picked up is sort of an acknowledgement of, like, of the fact that backup catcher is just, it's a defensive spot. You're not looking for a guy with, like, a ton of pop or anything like that. You're not hoping that they're going to, you know, be a good pinch hitter in the National League game or anything like that. It's more of an acknowledgement that this is a guy who can, you know, work with the pitchers and better construct it all. And I'm trying to remember exactly, because this is something I'm trying to think about with these position battles too. I know Michael Perez is out of options. Is Tony Walters, was he a waiver guy too, or was he a minor league deal guy?
Tony Walters was, he was a minor league deal guy.
That's right. So maybe that'll play into it too. I'm not sure what his options are or anything like that. I know they're both similar age, like neither of them is necessarily young. I think they're both 28 or 29 or something like that. So I don't know. I think they have similar, I guess, profiles. I think Walters has had some more past success. But you know, it's just, I'm not going to say it's like a crapshoot, because I know it'll come down, like it'll be a very intentional decision. But I just am willing to acknowledge that I don't know enough about like the ins and outs of catching to say for sure which one has kind of put their leg up, you know?
Yeah, and I think Michael Perez does have an option left. I think that might, I had seen that discussed someplace that I believe that was when Walters was signed, that was kind of some of the discussion that was coming down, just because it was like, well, it didn't look like, you know, maybe Michael Perez could be a guy that they could. Yeah, he has 2 minor league options left. So,
okay, great.
So that's kind of, but I know that it's tough, just because also, I mean, there's just so many games getting caught. There's people doing the bullpens, and there's just so many catchers in camp that it's one that, I mean, I think it's not as interesting for fans. It's kind of interesting for me, because I like to watch the catchers. When I used to go down to spring training, I would sit behind them and just watch them, you know, frame pitches and stuff. But it's definitely one that it doesn't catch everybody's eye. But you know what? Who has caught everybody's eye is Cabrian Hayes. And he was going to be the answer you cannot give for this next question, because it's the player who has impressed you the most. You are allowed to talk about Cabrian Hayes for a few seconds, but then you have to name a position player and a pitcher who has impressed you as well. So you can either choose to talk about Cabrian Hayes for a little bit, or you can pick just one guy other than Cabrian Hayes.
Well, I'll keep it fun and just keep it short on Cabrian Hayes, because everyone, you know, he is kind of the main event of the team right now. I will just say that even when he makes out, he's hitting balls on ropes to outfield. Like, it seems like the guy never makes soft contact, which is good. I mean, it's just crazy for someone so young. But I'll leave it at that. I'll keep it fun and you know, bring us some variety. And this is, I don't know if this is unpopular. I really don't have a good feel for how the fan base feels about him. But Gregory Polanco, I think, has honestly really impressed me. Like, I'm not sure what he did, like what his stats are, if they changed drastically over the weekend. But to start in the first week, he's hitting like 500. He had 2 home runs. Like, he's, you know, playing quite well and hitting the ball well. And it looks like, you know, he's talked in seasons past about, you know, he feels a lot better getting into the season. And it hasn't always brought the, you know, uptick in production that people would hope would come from someone feeling better. But, you know, it was the same kind of thing this year, where he's saying he feels a lot better. He feels healthy. He feels good coming into the season. He feels refreshed. And that, you know, it's kind of played out in the first week, again, with the caveat that it's just the first week, but it seems like he's, you know, you would much rather him come out of the gate hot than otherwise, you know, and it's certainly been a good start for him. And then the guy, the pitcher that's really, you know, I don't know, surprised or impressed, I guess, either way, David Bednar has been really great for them out of the bullpen. And it's tough with some of these pitchers because you only get an inning here and an inning there, especially for starters. It's hard to get a good grasp of, like, who really looks good. But Bednar is going to be a bullpen guy anyways, and his stuff looks great, man. I didn't really realize when they picked him up in San Diego in that Musgrove trade how hard he threw. The discrepancy between the fastball and the curveball, like the speed discrepancy, is really, you would think it would be a huge benefit to him. And then he's got the splitter to go along with it. That's been great. He picked it up from Hideo Nomo, of all people.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Which is crazy. But he's been really, really good. And I don't think he's given up a run yet. It's just been a nice welcome, I guess, addition to that back-end bullpen conversation, especially as you view guys like Kyle Crick and Richard Rodriguez, who aren't exactly fireballers or anything like that, and you throw Blake Beer into the mix too. Like, it could turn into a really interesting position of guys with, mix of guys with experience and guys who really have, outstanding stuff and maybe a little bit younger. But, Bednar to me has been, I really look forward to every time he comes out on the mound, I look forward to watching.
Yeah, because I definitely saw like your one post about him. It's like, yeah, David Bednar just took out the last three guys, and he used, like, three different pitches to do so. It was just like he was having them guessing and all over the place, and that was awesome. And I think some of that probably did get lost just because, the big story about him being the local guy, from Mars, PA, with the Pirate jersey on and stuff, and thinking, oh, that's kind of a cool story. But then when it comes down to, brass tacks, it's like, this guy's a major leaguer. This isn't just like, this feel-good story. Like, he actually has the ability. And what you were saying with, like, Polanco, what a lot of people forget is he came down with COVID, last year and didn't get started right away and was just kind of, like, thrown off after having, like, a hot start to spring training. And the year before, even when he was playing injured, he played like he's played in the past, maybe not like the best version of himself, but still, serviceable. So, like you said, man, it is great to just see, like you said, doing better rather than, seeing him come out and do horrible. I don't think anybody wants him to see that. So, and I know it's a small sample size, and you're talking about the guys that you're impressed with. Is there anybody, pitchers or anybody in the field that has you even just a little bit concerned or just looking like they may not have, they're just having a little bit of a bad start to spring training?
Yeah, you could point to, Mitch Keller, but he only threw, one outing, too, which means exactly one inning. Chad Kuhl's been a little bit hit or miss. Brubaker's been a little bit hit or miss, but both guys have admitted to, working on new stuff. Chad Kuhl's trying to figure out his two-seam fastball as he goes. And I think, he said it was better in his second start as opposed to the first one. And so, maybe when he gets that tightened down, that'll make a big difference too. But I wouldn't say that anybody, any pitchers especially, really come to mind. I think you could start to, I don't know if worried is the right word here or whatever, but start to keep an eye on guys like Colin Moran or Brian Reynolds, who's gotten off to slow starts again in the spring, or just, especially Reynolds, the drop off from 2019-2020 is obviously concerning. And if he gets off to a slow start this year, I think people will start to, really, I guess, wonder of like, man, can he really turn it around? Because it is such a drastic, like I said, drop off. I don't know. I think it's easier with these small sample sizes to be like, well, yeah, but it's encouraging. Versus, like, if something's good, it's like, yeah, that's encouraging. If something's bad, it's like, I just need time. I feel like that's my personal, natural inclination. I guess you can do it, but, by the same token, I think it's, a little bit more of a sample size. It's fair to start to be a little bit concerned by guys who are starting off slow at the plate, especially. Stallings has been another one that's been a little bit slow, but again, he's not, offense isn't really his thing anyway. So, I guess I should frame that as like anything he gives you on offense is plus just because he is so good on defense. There've been a few guys who at least have started slow and with a little bit more time, I think it'd be fair to start to wonder, how long they will need to warm up.
Yeah, because they always say, sometimes the pitchers are working on stuff, like you said, and other times, that the hitters just need, you know, a couple weeks to catch up. So it's hard to judge too much. And some guys get off to hot starts, and some guys just really don't. And they are streaky players or have to, you know, build throughout the season. So it all depends on, you know, what type of player they are. And if we're having the same conversation, you know, a month into the season about having those concerns, then, you know, it's a little bit of a different story, I would believe.
Yeah, and one of the other, I guess, even throwing in that, you know, going back to the center field battle that we were talking about earlier, you know, I think it's easy to go into these situations where there's two or three guys competing for a spot, say, well, you know, whoever performs better, whoever goes and takes that opportunity, like, it makes sense to give them a chance, you know, to start opening day or whatever. But you know, what happens if either guy grabs the opportunity? What happens if Alfred and Goodwin have both been really struggled, but Fowler came in and has had a couple good hits, has made good contacts, and so, you know, maybe he ends up being the guy that really steps up in spring training or whatever. But, you know, it's something to wonder about. And I think the same, Cole Tucker obviously went down with an injury, and so it's a little bit different. But Cole Tucker's another one where, like, okay, well, what if guys in the competition just struggle? What if they just don't look quite ready for the start? Like, then who do you think, you know? But like I said, there are guys that you know, you could definitely throw into that category, which is going to be natural for the Pirates this season anyway. So I don't think it'll take anybody by surprise if there are a few guys in the lineup who don't have the best numbers all year, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those another possible evaluation year, but, you know, you don't want to see anybody struggle, but, you know, it's going to happen. Like, everybody, I mean, unless they all put together, like, they all kind of, you know, mostly fell apart last year, if you could just do the complete 180, but the chances of that happening are about the same as everybody slumping at the exact same time. So, I mean,
right.
But everybody's going to have their ebbs and flows. Well, the Pirates are off today, but, you know, before they went their off day, Ben Cherington went and threw us a bone and gave us a little bit of news here to talk about. The Dwayne Underwood Jr. Trade, getting him from the Cubs after he had been DFA'd, and setting Cedric Apostle to the Cubs, and also DFAing Carson Fulmer in, like, this whole string of moves here. I was telling you before the show, I've written something on this for our website for tomorrow. It'll probably come out before this interview. I have my opinions. I have my thoughts on this. I just want to get somebody else's thoughts and opinions on what you think about this trade and maybe what the motivation behind this was for Ben Cherington.
So I think that, first, I'll start with the motivation, just because I think that you know, it's easy to get into it. Like, if you don't like the trade, you at least have to understand, like, why they did it, you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
And I think the why is, like, this is kind of their strategy. This is what they're doing. This is what they did with Alfred. I guess it kind of, I don't know if it's ironic or whatever, what they've tried to do with Fulmer too, what they're doing with Fowler as well. Guys who were high prospects and have, for whatever reason, fallen on hard times, maybe they had injuries, maybe they were just capped in whatever organization, there were guys that hadn't been at the position, whatever. And guys who were ranked in the top 100 in all four of those guys' cases in terms of prospects, and you know, pick them up later on in their career, maybe tweak a few things, maybe a new setting gives them some help, and hope that they can become a part of, you know, what you're trying to build here in Pittsburgh. And I think Underwood kind of fits that bill. Like, he obviously, you know, he obviously struggled a little bit with the Cubs and wasn't exactly what they wanted. And you know, maybe that's putting it generously or whatever. He had a 5.66 ERA last year, but there's obviously stuff that makes him an attractive candidate. And like I said, that's kind of what the Pirates have done so far in, like, picking up guys off waivers. I think the interesting part is what they did give back, right? Because, I guess it comes at the cost of poor Carson Fulmer, who's been DFA'd by the Pirates, like, three times in the last year since they first claimed him last summer. And then Cedric Apostle, who we'll see what he turns out to be. He's obviously still quite young, but he's huge, and he's, like, a power guy. Festivus Family Barbecue, or I hope I'm not butchering their name, but on Twitter, the popular, like, baseball account.
Yeah.
And they were talking about how they remembered him from the Little League World Series because he was huge then, and he's really big now. He's 6'5", 245 first baseman, and, And so, yeah, he's like, it'll be interesting. I guess, you know, it could look really bad in hindsight when you, depending on how he develops and all that. But I understand why the Pirates did it. I can also understand anyone who's either upset or pleased with it. Like, I can certainly see either side of the coin there.
Yeah, and you gave me something to think about there. I'm not sure if I'm completely on board yet, but I've said this from the beginning that I would trust Charrington and his judgment and what he's done, because he hasn't really done anything that's disappointed me so far. It was just a guy that I was kind of high on in the minors, and I didn't write about it in this part, but the thing that got me is maybe it was due to a lack of position flexibility. It seemed like he was going to be stuck at first base, and it seems like Charrington and those guys, you know, likes people with, you know, position versatility. But before I let you go, Mike, I have one more question to ask you, and it's about guys that could possibly be on the 26-man roster bubble to start the year. Do you see any guys that could be a surprise possibly to get sent down to AAA, or maybe another person who would be a surprise to make the 26-man roster?
I would say that maybe the surprise guy, just because he's been around for a while, but I think Cole Tucker might find himself in AAA to start this year, just because of, like I said, that kind of you know, hotly contested middle infield battle, or however you want to word it, and he still has options. I think, weirdly enough, Brian Goodwin might end up being a guy who starts at AAA because it is a minor league deal. But you know, we will see. Like that's going to be so interesting, is what happens to these guys on the bubble. Even like a guy like Todd Frazier, like, what if they end up deciding, like, yeah, well, Philip Evans, maybe he's our backup, you know, infielder, corner infielder, however you want to put it. And we like him as a part of our future versus, you know, 35-year-old Todd Frazier. Like, it'd be pretty wild to put Todd Frazier, of all people, in AAA at this point in his career, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it just seems like there are certain guys that they bring in, and even if it's on a minor league deal, like with Brian Goodwin or Todd Frazier, they just, their name, like, you kind of recognize their name and know who they are. And it just feels weird to think that the Pirates, a team that you know, admittedly kind of rebuilding and isn't really playing for the now necessarily, would end up cutting guys who could probably make another major league roster. You know, but yeah, I think the biggest surprise would end up being Cole Tucker. It might make people upset that they're not going to give a younger guy some reps out there. But it just feels like a kind of a tough break for him, that there's just so many bodies out there in the middle infield. Who, you know, it's hard to see exactly where all of them fit out there, and he might just end up getting the short end of the stick because he has options left and the others don't. But yeah, I think that would be probably the main one that I would point to.
Is there, on the other side of the coin, maybe somebody you think that could, you know, make it onto the roster that people might not be thinking of?
That's a good question. I haven't really thought of it from that end of, like, I don't know. It just feels like sort of like a little mishmash of guys. Like, everyone, like, there isn't anybody that's on that bubble that I think is substantially ahead of everybody else. You know what I'm saying? Like, I could make a case for anyone who's on that bubble of making it. Like, you know, for example, like Cole Tucker, you know, I could make a case for why you should make it, or Brian Goodwin, like I mentioned, or Todd Frazier. Like, any of those guys who maybe could be sent to AAA or cut, or however you want to word it. Like, I could certainly make the case for them flipping sides too. I'm trying to think of guys that maybe are on the bubble that you wouldn't normally think of who would be in. Maybe David Bednar. Maybe people don't necessarily expect him to be on. I know I mentioned him earlier. Like, it's I don't know. Is there anybody in mind that you're curious about?
The person I've been touting from the beginning of this has been Chase at Spitzbar since they picked him up in the Rule 5 in AAA. I like the kid. I like his stuff. And he's been my surprise guy from the beginning. I was just getting a perspective, and I could see you mentioning Bednar, like, that's one too, because, I mean, he's a guy that, you know, has not too much, you know, major league experience, has a few innings here and there, that is already a surprise in camp and probably could be you know, surprised to make the team. So I
that whole bullpen, like, you know, kind of fits into to what I was saying there. It's just the bullpen. They have a lot of guys who are just, like, you know, kind of have interesting arms, right? Like a lot of just, you know, interesting repertoires, and I think there's a potential for them to be like a pretty deep bullpen if they play their cards the right way. But I've been meaning to do this. I have to sit down and think of, like, you know, the hierarchy of the bullpen right now. Like, how many spots are there realistically up for grabs? Because obviously there are guys like, you know, Cedro and maybe, or Rodriguez for sure, and Crick for sure, who are definitely going to make the roster. Hart Leap would probably fit into that. Sam Howard too. Guys who you would think would definitely make the opening day roster, and how many spots there are left to grab. And I know they have Luis Oviedo too. Obviously has to be out there as a real five bat unless they're comfortable losing him. But it is just a really interesting kind of situation out there where there aren't, you know, the best of the rest or whatever. It's hard to figure out exactly who's separating themselves, because I think a lot of them have pretty similar paths, if not similar arsenals or whatever, similar paths and you know, ways that they got to the Pirates and things that they've accomplished in the past. It's certainly an interesting group that I think, like I said, could maybe end up, you know, turning into a team strength depending on how things break.
Yeah, and it all comes down to other things. Are you going to carry that extra pitcher? Are you going to carry the extra bench? You know, is Charrington going to use the options, especially in the beginning with, you know, having the alternate site, being able to use that to feed the team for at least a little bit. It's going to be an interesting few weeks coming up here, Mike. I can't disagree with you on that.
Yeah, no doubt, no doubt. And you know, not to take too long or belabor the point or anything, but that pitching, you know, pitching is obviously going to be, and everyone who you talk to has said it, pitching is going to be so important this year, like depth of pitching, like having a lot of guys who are capable of stepping in, because it's going to be a weird year with guys coming off of last year. Some maybe didn't pitch at all, some pitched a little bit, and either way, it was in a shortened season. Coming into this year, are they ready to really ramp it up and pitch every day if they have to, or pitch, you know, back-to-backs or whatever? And you know, I think it's pretty important for Charrington to get it right and get the, you know, weigh the balance of having strength on the roster at the beginning while also having flexibility with guys who you can put who still have options, you can put in AAA and all that.
As you know, man, I enjoy talking baseball with you. I could do it for actually probably all day if I had the time. But everybody, go read Mike's stuff over at the Post Gazette. Read Jason Mackey's stuff. Follow Mike at Mike D. Piersack, PERSAK on Twitter. Listen to the North Shore Drive podcast, and also listen to Bucks in the Basement anywhere podcasts can be found, and always at bucksinthebasement.com.
Now I see the changes in this town. They change, they say.